Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Palo Verde Homes. Palo Verde Homes is a premier custom and speculative home builder in El Paso, Texas and Southern New Mexico. Their commitment to you is to offer the best in design, materials, customer service, workmanship, and quality at competitive market prices. Palo Verde Homes is poised to add luxury and distinctive touches to every new home that they build and raise the standard of excellence that other new home builders will be sure to follow. They are very proud of the new homes that they build, and that shows in their quality, workmanship, and finish. Contact them at 915-584-9090 on their website, paloverdehome.com, or at any of their monohome locations throughout El Paso. Palo Verde Homes, what coming home should feel like. All right, let's do this, guys. Let's get the show started. Hey guys, so week two. Thank you very much for making it this far with us on this journey. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I don't really know what time of day you guys are listening to this, but thank you very much for joining us on the second week. Narrow El Paso brings you conversations. So this is a new thing we got going on in conjunction with Narrow El Paso to get you guys to meet a couple of the people that have made the organization and have bring a lot to either the real estate or the local El Paso market. My name is Ozzy Chavez. I'm your 2019 Non-Rep El Paso president. And this week we have a really interesting, one of my favorite conversations that we've had so far with a local musician, Julio Ortiz. You're going to get to hear his story, his upbringing, his contribution to the music scene here in El Paso. And I want to take a little bit of time to talk to you guys a little bit about the NAREP 2019 National Conference. This is a perfect conversation to talk to you guys a little bit about Latitude, NAREP at Latitude. 35 days away, September 26th through the 29th. So it's a great conference. Those of you guys have been part of it. I really recommend you guys attend again. If you have not been to it, I suggest that you look into it and make plans to attend this year. Last year, we had a great set of speakers, a lot of breakout sessions, a lot of classes, a lot of business to be made. And this year's lineup is, I would say, probably a little bit better. You have a lot of real estate individuals attending the conference for NAREP. David Stockman, former U.S. Treasury Secretary, Oscar Munoz, who's the CEO of United Airlines, Anna Navarro, a GOP strategist, Julian Castro, who's a current presidential candidate, and then, of course, David Acosta, our national homegrown, homebred El Paso NAREP national president. But on the other side, on the Latitude side of things, you have a lot of people coming in to talk to you about the cultura, right? The culture, that thing that brings us all together. Music, food, movies, entertainment, things like that. Emilio Estefan is going to be there. And those of you guys that have been around as long as some of us, at least as long as me, know who Emilio Estefan is. Zoe Saldana, great movie star. And you're going to hear a little bit about her foundation and the things that she's doing outside of her movie career. Eugenio Derbez is going to be there. Another awesome, awesome actor that I'm sure most of you guys know. Tony Gonzalez. Those football freaks out there will know Tony Gonzalez, legendary tight end in the NFL for many years. And Luis Fonsi. Luis Fonsi plays a great role this year because not only is he a speaker, not only is he going to tell you a little bit about what he's done, his humanitarian efforts, but we also have a private concert for those attending Latitude. Some tickets might still be available. You guys are going to have to jump on the website to figure out if they're still there. Last year, we had a great private concert. And I think this year is going to be even better. So again, NAREP at Latitude, our 2019 national convention, 35 days away. We got special tickets available through the El Paso, NAREP El Paso chapter. So if you guys are interested, if you guys want to attend, if you guys want information, if you guys just want to talk about what the convention brings, reach out to any of the board members. We'll get you guys the information. We'll get you guys the details and get you all signed up. Okay. But without further ado, this is a conversation that I had with Julio Ortiz, one of our local musicians here in El Paso. Hope you guys enjoy it. Just because I don't like the whole podium thing.
Yeah.
I'm a holder. So what's happening?
Not much, brother.
No? Everything's good?
Another day here in the Southwest, man. It's hotter than heck.
But see?
Yeah.
How was it yesterday? What? You said Anthony Levin, but that?
Anthony Levin. I had a gig first over at the El Paso Zoo, but they have like an indoor kind of thing there. But man, just setting up and rolling in and out of there was hot, bro.
At the El Paso, you were serenading the giraffes?
Yeah. Like,
that's good.
I was having a Mowgli moment in there from Jungle Book.
Yeah. That's good. So thank you, first of all, for taking the time to sit down with us. I got to tell you that I'm a little excited about this one. Yeah. So I started kind of looking at lists, right? Mm-hmm. Remember, and that's the whole idea, right? Conversations, just to talk to people around the city. And originally, I mean, you go through your list of people that you know and who would be interesting. Who do people want to know? Who do people want to hear about? And I was going through my Rolodex. I said, I'm going to call Julio. I mean, you can't get any more interesting than that. You have a really, really interesting background. You have, I think you have a really good story to tell.
Well, there's a... Originally, I was a theater artist, and then, love of the stage. We used to do Viva El Paso and Shakespeare on the Rocks, and over at New Mexico State, in the Black Blocks Theater over there, and got up to Chicago for a while to go. We wrote a play and took it up to Chicago, and
wrote a play,
and they invited us up there, and it was called Riders on the Storm. That was one of the ones that we took up to Chicago, got invited up there to a conference and present and did the whole thing. And, you know, so I was doing the whole theater thing for a while and graduated from New Mexico State University under their theater arts program over there. So that was the passion. But, man, underneath, I always felt music just going, hey, what, you remember?
It was just, yeah, it was knocking me? At you.
Right? Yeah, because piano was the first thing that I started on was when I was young. We just had a piano there at the house. And I'd kind of mess around with it. Never really took classes or anything, but just the curiosity of it and the mysticism of not knowing what the heck was going on with it.
Right.
Was kind of it left it appealing to me. So all throughout the whole theater arts thing, I always had music back there, just going, "Hey, man, remember me? Remember me?" And so that was the life, you know, a whole life ago, man. But and then ever since then, music just kind of took over again.
And you're El Paso born.
El Paso born. Although we grew up in Nuevo Casas Grandes, about 2.5-3 hours away from here.
Okay.
As soon as you cross over into Mexico, it's about 2.5 hours away. Nuevo Casas Grandes or Paquimé, as they know it. Chantes Longos. Yes. We would spend our summers over there on the ranch and
you know what, I think a lot of us did that because, I mean, I remember I was born here. Summers I would spend them in Juarez. Yeah. We would go to Delicias,
yeah,
in El Rancho Cacahuate.
Yeah,
in Delicias. And I think a lot of us when we were younger, I mean, I don't know what the age difference is between you and me, but I think a lot of us grew up that way.
Yeah.
Here during winter time, school time, Juarez or Mexico in the summer times, and
yeah, that's true, man. We would migrate back and forth. I mean, mainly because you come up here to do the school thing and get ahead and progress over here, and then, you know, during the summers you had time off, so you go down and visit all the family down there and go spend some good time in the rios and splashing around in there and climbing mountains over there. But
high school graduate class of what?
I graduated from Burgess High School, class of 94.
Okay.
Over there. But I bounced around. I was a bit of a troublemaker when I was young. So.
Yeah. <it's>, and
but you know what? I think I just wanted to experience the different school systems and see what
the schools have to offer.
That's right. you can't just hold yourself to one right there.
Greg, so class of 94, and you, I'm assuming you started music, theater, all of that in school?
You know what? I was a late bloomer. I started right out of high school. As soon as I finished up with high school, I was like, what the heck am I going to do now? You know, so even with music, it was just like a late thing. Aside from having the piano at the house and growing up tinkling around and that thing, I didn't start playing guitar actually until I was about 18, right out of high school, about 18-ish.
What made you pick up the guitar?
Probably trying to impress some girl or something. Who knows? I don't even remember, man, to tell you the truth. But I'm sure that had something to do with it. But yeah, once I picked it up, man, I couldn't put it back down. I'd wake up in the morning, start playing, and at the end of the night, I'd fall asleep with a guitar in my chest, you know, still kind of noodling around on it. And it was just a passion, man. It was just one of those things where it went from never having done it to can't go a day without doing it.
Right, you know? Without being able to put it down.
Yeah.
So you graduate high school, you go to college, and then that's when you start theater art.
And it was once I got to college, at first I went to UTIP for the first semester, and I was not prepared for the university life. So I ended up dropping out of there and went to El Paso Community College instead. And it was there where I met Hector Serrano, who is the director and the founder of Viva El Paso. And at the time he was teaching theater arts over at the El Paso Community College. Mm-hmm. And I had to take an elective. So I said, all right, I'll try this theater arts. Let's see what's going on with that.
Right.
And you know, while we were in there, I remember they had to do, Hector said, all right, we're going to do three presentations, for two monologues, and then the last one is going to be a scene with somebody, he said. And so the first two monologues, I kind of like half-assed and just, you know, just turned anything in to get a grade. And Hector Serrano, the like I said, the director of Viva and Shakespeare on the Rocks and all that, he pulled me aside and he called me out and he challenged me. He says, I know what you're doing. He says, you're just up there giving a half-ass effort. He says, and yeah, you can squeak by, he says. But I see the talent. I see the talent in you. And he says, and I challenge you. For the last one, give it your effort. Show me what you can do. And so I kind of took him seriously and went over there and you know, threw down on that last project that we had to do, which was a performance. He pulled me aside after that class and he said, hey, I want you to come out and do Shakespeare on the Rocks. I want you to come out and do Viva El Paso with us. And that's how the whole theater thing started, really. It was
off a challenge. Off, man. Hey, stop messing around and do it right.
Yeah, yeah.
Off of scolding.
Stop living life at half. You know, at half the pedal and push it down, man. Get right. going, you know.
Okay.
So in a way, you know, thanks, Hector. Thank you. I still keep in touch with Hector, and we're hopefully trying to put together a performance over at the Plaza Theater. Upstairs, they have another smaller theater where he wants to do some performances up there.
Okay.
But we're kind of in the talks of doing that presently right now.
So you start the class with him. He gives you the challenge. He sees that you have the potential. And then how did you get into writing your first play?
That was over in Las Cruces at New Mexico State University under the our department head over there at the time was Ruth Cantrell.
Okay.
And Ruth she works a lot in children's theater. She has an affinity for working with children's theater and instilling all the new values and morals and just behavior into the youth. She was pretty smart. She said, all right, that's the future right there. So that's the people I want to talk to. Mm-hmm. And it was through her that we sat down and we started talking about some different ideas. And there we wrote a couple of different plays. Some of them were, the majority of them were for kids. And then the last one was the one where Ruth encouraged me to say, hey, well, what story do you have to tell? And so I sat there and thinking about it, and it was, you know, it had a lot to do with the Southwest growing up around here, and so she's the one that really prodded me on to write it.
Now, is the play before or after Viva El Paso?
The play was after. I did Viva El Paso up until 1999, I think. 1999-ish, somewhere around there.
Okay. And what did you do with Viva El Paso?
With Viva El Paso, that was a whole adventure, man. Everything to be done there.
Did you ever wear the antlers and do the dancing with the antlers?
No, that was our... Man, we had one guy, Alejandro, and that guy did the deer dance better than everybody else tried. But that guy just... Man, he nailed it. There was four different parts of Viva El Paso. The mythological, which is, you know, all the native Indian stuff before.
Right.
And then it's all the history, basically. So it was that, and then the arrival of the Spaniards, and then it was the mestizos, and then finally Fort Bliss and all the Western stuff. And so, each one of them lends opportunities to get on stage, being a soldier, being an Indian, being whatever it was. And then all the dancing, folklorico and flamenco and all the other stuff, too, that goes with it. But Hector really encouraged everybody to try to do as much as possible in different varieties as possible so you can just grow as an artist. It was his goal to make a three-headed monsters out of everybody. Somebody who can sing, dance, and also act. And so that was his goal. And God bless him for that, man, because he doesn't work with... It's not like he was working with professionals, man. He was working with a bunch of rowdy, ruckus kids, man. And
a lot of college kids.
Yeah, and so, yeah. He did great with what he could.
And this is... how long were you there for?
Was that Viva from 1995, I want to say, till 1999? I was only there about 4 or 5 years there, and then I started doing Shakespeare, which ran on a little bit longer. Okay. Shakespeare on the Rocks,
right
out at McElligan Canyon Amphitheater out there, and man, that was great. That was probably some of the best times I think I remember, man.
Yes. The play, what was it about?
The one that we wrote.
Yeah, the one that you wrote.
That one was about.
What was the name of the play?
It was called Riders, just period Riders.
Okay.
And it was a correlation between Ireland back in, man, before technology, before the industrial age, just it was a parallel between then and now living out here in El Paso and Las Cruces, mainly because... Well, the cultures we came to discover, there's so many correlations, so many through lines between the Irish culture and the Mexican culture. I mean, so many different things. The Day of the Dead, they have Samhain, which is in essence the same thing. there was the type of music that they play. There was a lot of throughways that we found. Anyways, the way that the people in Ireland made it, they lived in a small little island called Donegal, and they'd have to travel anywhere to go and do business, to do trade, to do barter, to do anything.
Okay.
And so that parallel kind of struck me that out here in El Paso and Las Cruces, we're technically on an inland island. You have to travel 5 hours, 4 hours to get anywhere in any direction. If you go out to Albuquerque or Santa Fe, you're looking at 4.5, 5 hours. If you go out to Arizona, to Tucson, you're looking at 5 hours. So we're technically on an island, even though we're in the middle of the desert right here.
Right.
We're secluded from everybody else, even Mexico from all its neighbors, Las Cruces from its, and El Paso from its.
Right.
So here we are in the sister city, little island here, and you have to travel... If you want to do business, well, nowadays, of course, there's Amazon Prime and everything. You can do everything online. But before, it used to be the case that you had to hit the road. You had to hit the road if you wanted to do any business.
Right.
And all of the risks and all of the dangers that came with that. And so that was the whole premise of the story. Was it was kind of neat because half the stage was split where it was, you know... Ireland in its antiquity, and half of it was a small Mexican family here on this side of the stage. But basically, the dialogue, the things that they were saying, one of them could stop mid-sentence, and on the other side of the stage, the other one picks up, and it was still current. It was still, you know, made perfect sense.
Right.
So yeah, that's the whole premise of the play was a contrast and a correlation of the two cultures. And just their daily processes.
Now you wrote this by yourself? This is your project, your baby.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Wrote that again with a lot of prodding from Ruth Cantrell and just bouncing ideas off of her because she had a lot of experience in it already, and so that's how it came to fruition.
And then, how does the play end up in Chicago? How did you guys end up there?
We submitted it to a couple of different playwright organizations and contests and whatnot. And somebody up in Chicago liked it, and they said, "Get up here and present." And they said, "This is really neat. It speaks to a lot of people." She said, "So get up here and present." So we did. We went up there, and it was midwinter, man. Boy, I remember that in Chicago. That was not friendly, man. I'll tell you that. But
very different from the desert.
Yes.
So you go up, you up, and you present, and then what happens?
And that's it. You know, we got a couple of different calls from after that for publishing and distribution out into a couple of different other colleges and universities. Okay. And they sent it out to the schools and whatnot. So that was kind of neat, man. It was neat. It was a good experience.
So what happens with the actual play? Does it ever get made? Does it ever get?
Yeah, it's out there. It's out there, and it's on the shelves of the libraries out there. So it's kind of neat.
So it is there.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Take me a little bit after that. So you're doing Viva El Paso, you're doing the acting, mm-hmm. you do the play, you go to Chicago, you do the thing. When does music overtake all of that?
Wow, let me think here. When I got back from that, when I graduated from New Mexico State University, and I had gone on to, man, well, I traveled around a bit, Burbank and New York and pursuing the theater, the acting, that whole thing.
Right.
And it was at one point that I came back to El Paso and I was here. And how did that go down? Let me see. I ended up at the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences in Tempe, Arizona, because I wanted to learn. I already had some understanding of the performance side of it, but I'd wanted to learn the other side of the glass, which was recording, editing, right. mixing, mastering, and doing all that. So I looked it up, and there was a program over in Tempe, Arizona, called the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences, and I ended up there. It's a short program, maybe about 9 months, I want to say. But while you're there, you're learning from the guys who literally were in the studio recording the Beatles, the Doors, Who, Zeppelin, wow. the Stones. I mean, it's endless. These guys were the guys who would sit there and in sessions with those guys, you know, with Clapton and with all those guys.
Right.
So we were learning from these guys how to record, how to, you know, polish it up, make it sound good, and how to deal with the clients too, with the musicians and the business aspect of it too. But at the time, it was the introduction of the digital age back in 2003. I want to say it was 2002 is what it was.
Okay.
And so, you know, we were still going from literally tape decks and running, you know, tape machines, mm-hmm. to switching over to the computers and laptops and Pro Tools and all this other stuff.
Right.
And so it took a lot of incorporation, and it was a whole, it was a brave new world back then, you know, and learning all about that. I wanted to learn both sides of the glass, in essence. I wanted to be the musician, but I also wanted to know what's going on the other side of the glass.
Right, how it all gets put together. Right, right, right.
And so once I graduated from there, finished up that program, I came back here and did my, you had to do an internship. And I did mine at the Sonic Ranch out here in Tornillo, which mm-hmm. is a great studio, man, great facility out there. And I was out there mainly patching cables and running patch bays and doing all that kind of stuff and, you know, paying your dues while you're at it and getting to know the work environment while you're there. We had the guys from Ministry come down. There was a couple of different artists that all came down at the time.
You know what? And it's funny that you bring up the Sonic Ranch because I keep an eye out, but there's been a lot of big name bands that come down to Sonic Ranch and record here, and a lot of people don't know that.
It's a great studio and it's a great escape for those bands who in other cities the studios are right smack in the middle of downtown and it's in a big place or in a high rise or something. This studio, man, the Sonic Ranch out here offers just not only is it a like an escape from all that, but it really allows the band to get in there. You they have living quarters, so you're staying in there, and mm-hmm. and it makes it a very comfortable place to go in there and relax and record. recorded in a relaxed state of mind, in other
words.
And so that was kind of neat. And then coincidentally, from one of the guys that I graduated from the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences from, he, while we were still there at that program, the last project was to, you got to go out and find a band. You got to bring them in here, schedule sessions, record them, make them leave with a final product in hand.
Okay.
That was your final project.
Okay.
Well, my friend James Deering, I called him the mad scientist because this guy knew everything up and down. Even though he was like 17 years old, he was a kid, man. And he knew his stuff better than some of the professors there, man. So James, he had booked his band at the end of for the final project. The band flaked on him, and he was going to lose out on, I'm going to say it was like $20,000 to go to attend that 9-month seminar over there.
Holy cow.
And so he was going to lose out. And I told him, hey, man, I'm a musician. I can step in the studio for you. And sure enough, we did. We sat there and we ran some sessions that night and recorded it. He turned it in. Everything turned out peachy for him. And he went on to do his internship. Now, here's where it gets interesting. He did his internship over in New York. He went to the Electric Ladyland, which was Jimi Hendrix's studio. And
really? Okay.
So he ended up there and under the direction of and tutelage of Lee Foster, who was running the Electric Lady up there.
Okay.
And one of the days that Jay was sweeping up Studio A up there, where, you know, I can't tell you how many artists have recorded up there. I mean, it's a laundry list of them. So he's up there sweeping Studio A, and he just decided to throw on the mix that he had recorded back at the conservatory. And it was at that moment that Lee Foster, the director up there, he said, hey, man, who's this? What do you got playing up here? And he says, just some guy recorded back in Arizona. He says, hmm. And so that was it. Lee was going on some kind of vacation, and he was gone for about I think James said he was gone for about 2 weeks, and he came back. Mm-hmm. And the first thing he said, as soon as you walked back into the studio, Lee said, call your guy. Get him up here. And so James gave me a call
he was playing your demo.
Yeah, he was playing my demo up there. And so that's it. You know, the mad scientist gave me a call. He said, get your ass up here. And sure enough, I did. I flew up there and we ran some sessions over there, did some recordings over there. Remember, while I was there, they had I was in Studio B, and in Studio A, they had Moby. And D'Angelo, who was R&B kind of singer at the time. Right. And it was just neat, man. Being in there, I didn't have a place to stay. So I was sleeping on the couch in Studio A inside of the Electric Ladyland while I was there. And so that was neat. We did some recordings, and those got shopped around to all the different companies as well. Columbia and Capitol Records and whatnot. And it was right around at the same time that I decided to come back home to El Paso.
Okay.
After we shopped it around to a couple of the record companies, they said, what do you want to do? What's your goals? What is it you want to do?
Right.
And at the time, I was just about to get married. And so I said, well, you know, family's a huge priority for me. I told them. And so that's kind of where you know, we came back to El Paso here. And life occurred. Got married, had kids 2 years later, and so that was that. That was enough of the traveling around and doing all that stuff. So we decided to stay here and just set up a career in music, which was, it's hard enough to do it in a big city. And then in a small
city. And then to do it even in a smaller one.
In a small market like this. But man, I've been blessed, brother. I can't tell you how grateful I am for having found a niche here in El Paso, man. There's music, abundance of talent here, man. I can vouch for that. I've run into some of the finest artists here in El Paso. Having traveled and done all that stuff, I can tell you there's an abundance of just a treasure, man, a treasure trove of talent here in the Southwest.
Tell me a little bit about your musical influence. What do you prefer? What do you like? what would give you your style? I mean, I've heard you live before. I've heard your music, but where do you get that from?
I think I can plainly answer that just by saying that we grew up on the border. And having grown up on the border, you got to know everything on this side of the border, and you got to know everything on the other side of the border, or at least we were exposed to it. You know, with when you're at home, at least in the household where I grew up in, we had, you know, Los Panchos playing, Javier Solís, Alberto Cortés, and we had all the Marco Antonio Muñiz, and, you know, everything that was from mariachis to trios to romances and boleros and all that stuff, and trova. And so you had, you know, that's part of your genetic buildup already. And then, you know, going to school, hanging out with all your friends here and just listening to the radio around here, you got everything that was, you know, of course, the Beatles and the blues. Texas blues was big around here. And all of the popular American or English speaking music. And so just the diversity that I think that, if anything, really describes me as an artist is the diversity and the variety. You can go catch one of the shows or that we'll all go play, and man, you'll hear some sick Texas blues followed up by Gypsy Kings, followed up by, you know, a trova, followed up by it's just so, before Pandora was around. that's what I did.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to a friend of mine not too long ago, and he's a trumpet player. Mm-hmm. And it was the same thing. He says, you know, I was exposed to so much that I pick up little things here and there. And he said, you know, to be honest with you, I don't have a favorite genre. I don't have a favorite this. I put something on for me. I mean, he's a wax guy. He's a vinyl guy. Mm-hmm. Put something on, I'll find something from it. I'll like it. That's There's exactly nothing that
right.
I don't like.
That's exactly right. one of the things that they also told us at that Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences was, you better learn to love all kinds of music, because you don't get to choose your clients. And if your client happens to be a country artist, then you better be a country fan, and you better know all the intricacies of what gives that country sound its sound. And so he said, heck, even you know, at the time it was like, you know, Britney Spears and all that poppy kind of stuff. He says you better find something to love in that. Everything has a quality.
Right.
If it didn't, it wouldn't be successful. You can sit there and be jealous and petty about, oh, well, why are these guys famous if, you know, but they did something right.
Right.
And you have to appreciate that.
And you never know when Britney Spears is going to call.
Exactly.
If Britney Spears swings up the phone, you better be ready to play guitar with her. You
damn sure better be in love with pop music and such. But yeah, there's a beauty in all sorts of music. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of surprised by people who only listen to you know, one genre, one style of music, be it hip hop or country or whatever, or death metal or whatever it may be, you know. And when there's a whole spectrum, a whole palette of things to choose from, and each one is beautiful in its own way. But yeah, that's variety and dynamics are a key thing to me in choosing the or selecting playlists.
Right. Yeah. I know you've cut your own records, right? You have your own album.
Yeah, we did Genuine was the title of that one, and that one was all originals on that one. just songs that I'd been you know, working on, crafting over the years. Some of them came in the matter of a night, some of them through the years, just pieces, you know, just little ideas that kind of fit to finish it. But yeah, that was a whole collection of just original tunes. And it was called Genuine.
Where did you do that one? Where did you record that one?
We did some of it in different studios. Like I said, it was cumulative over a few years. We did some of it in different studios.
So you had some here, some there, and then just pieced it together for the album.
Yeah. Okay. I feel sorry for the mastering engineer who had to get all the different levels and make them all the same.
But make them all the same, right?
But yeah, it turned out good. And
what about collaborations? Have you worked on anybody else's albums, recordings out there?
Yeah, quite a few. There's a let me see. Aside from other bands that I was actually in, We started up a group back in 2002, 2003. We started up it was myself, my buddy Charlie Villanueva, who's still in the music scene around here in El Paso. He's a promoter and a performer as well. And so he was on bass, and my other Scott Maristein, a drummer, local guy. but anyways, between the three of us, we started a group called El Camino, and at the time they were doing a Battle of the Bands kind of thing here, and so we ended up winning that thing, and we got to open up for the Doobie Brothers and over at Cohen Stadium is where that one was.
Wow, two like the Doobie Brothers and Cohen Stadium.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, and so that,
some people aren't gonna get that. Some people aren't gonna know either one of those two.
And so that was fun, man. And so once we finished up with that, another friend of ours, he came in from California, and we started another group called Radio La Chusma. And the four of us, you know, we played that for a while, and that kind of took off and took on a life of its own. And at the time, that's right when I started having kids, right? And I had a daughter, and being out till 2 a.m. just wasn't going to work out for me. It wasn't feasible for for maintaining a family.
Right.
So I kind of dropped out of that scene.
Now, radio's still around. Pretty big thing.
Radio's still making noise, man.
And you were a founding father.
Yeah, between myself and Ernie Tinajero, that is.
Right.
And that was our baby. But yeah, he's still got it going strong. Different pairings and groupings of musicians, but it's always the same high energy music, man.
Right.
so aside from that, I mean, did some sessions with some other guys here, the Dusty Lowe, Jesse Sullivan, the Sullivan Brothers, which is another treasure that El Paso has. If you guys have, if 915, if you haven't gone out and checked out the Sullivan Brothers, you need to. You're missing out. Just doing sessions, different sessions, and sitting in and doing recordings with other people. It's almost necessary, you know.
Right. Yeah. What's the gamut of instruments that you?
Man, I try. You know, I think my forte is mainly, of course, guitar first, and then piano. I actually started in school when I went in there. Remember, I walked into band class. It was over at MacArthur Middle,
right
on the east side of town. And I walked in there, a young, hopeful kid. And first day I walked into band class, Mr. Gerardo, Abel Gerardo was his name, Mr. G. Anyways, he says, "What do you want to play?" I says, "Man, I want to play the saxophone." "We got too many saxophone players. You're playing drums." And that was the end of my dream, man. That was my saxophone playing dream. I was going to be Mr. Sexy saxophone guy over here. Now he said, "No, we got too many saxophone players. You're playing drums." So I actually played through school the drums. That was my instrument. And all through high school too. And
that was your given instrument.
That was my given instrument. I didn't have a choice. It was, which is good, because now my rhythm is impeccable now.
You know what? I'm not a musician by any stretch of the imagination, right? I've played a couple things there, but anybody that can play drums, to me, to be able to do,
it incorporates the whole body.
Holy
right?
Holy cow! That's like your whole brain working at once. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, man. But yeah, those are, of course, you know, the bass is a guitar with four strings, so that's playable. I'd say woodwinds are just about the only things. The saxophone is the only thing I can't play now.
It's the only thing that you should but can't.
That's right.
What's coming up for you? What's the next? I mean, you do live gigs all over the place. I see you all over the place.
You know,
what's next?
Life is steady right now, man, and I'm not gonna make much waves right now. I feel, like I said, I feel blessed. I feel humbled and just grateful that I'm able to just go week to week. Of course, I have my steady gigs, which are Wednesdays at Hanson's, Thursdays at Doubletree, and Fridays over at Tabla. But then, you know, Saturdays and during the days and whatnot, I pick up gigs, be it for city officials, for doctors and attorneys and all sorts of different, just blessed to have people calling me and saying, hey bro, we need your music,
man. You do your random realtor tours?
Yes, but... yes, we do our realtor tours. That's always great, man. I know this great guy, Ozzy Chavez, who calls me up and invites me to go play for open houses and whatnot.
That's right, yeah.
But yeah, again, I'm blessed to have people like you who call me and say, bring us your music, you know. Set a tone for the evening, set the ambiance for the evening. And that's all I can ask for. That's really all I can ask for right now, serving, fulfilling my purpose and my passion. And to be able to do it in my hometown, heck, even better.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. Any recordings coming up? When are you dropping another...
I've been working on some new tunes, man. For whatever reason, the majority of the songs that I write are usually introspective and very a little bit too deep, a little bit too somber, I guess is the best way to describe it. But it's a little bit too real. So I kind of been wanting to work on something a little bit more fun, something a little bit more just less thought, more feel, basically.
Okay.
And hopefully we're gonna get I'm gonna gather a group of musicians to help me out with that, mm-hmm. and hopefully put something out by the end of this year.
By the end of this year?
Mm-hmm.
I see you have does she have a name?
No.
They have names? No. Are they supposed to have names?
This one's just the scrapper here.
That one's just that's the house guitar.
The house guitar that's just takes the beating. It takes.
You want to tinker on it a little bit? Give us a little something.
Different styles.
And that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I remember what was the first time? I think the first time that I saw you live, I think was at Tabla. I think it was
over at Tabla.
I think it was at Tabla, you and Freddie. And then I remember you did the tour for us. And then I saw you at one of the wine festivals.
Mm-hmm.
The wine festival was insane. I mean, we sat on the grass. I couldn't tell you which one we were at. Uh-huh. We were at one of the vineyards. And it was a big group of us. I remember we sat on the grass, had some wine, just listened to you for, guys, must have been like hours. It wasn't even that long.
Yeah, that's how
you just get lost in it. That's but, true, man. It's beautiful playing.
I'm known for not taking breaks too, man. So that's all my musician buddies are like, hey, bro, you got to take breaks, man. You're making us look bad, dude. You got to take breaks. But now, you know what? Once I get lost in the music, or once you get in the zone, it's you want to stay there. At least I do. I want to stay there and keep it going, because you take a break, you know, your voice cools off, the mood cools off, the crowd cools off, and once you already have them in your hand, man, just keep it going, you know, keep it. So that's one of the reasons I never take a break. But Freddie, my drummer, that guy is. I feel at home with that dude. It's one of those things. I don't think we've ever once rehearsed. I don't think we've ever once rehearsed. He just shows up. He feels the music, I feel the music, and we just jump in together. But man, he was a jazz ensemble drummer. And being a drummer myself, having played the role of a drummer myself, man, I can tell you, this Freddie's on another level, man. He's a natural percussionist is what he is. And man, it's a treat to have him come out and join me for gigs. You know? I'll tell you that, man.
I remember, and he'll tell you a little bit about it. He's, and you're right. I mean, his brain is on a completely different level. So we were, I used to work with Fred. We were in San Antonio, I think, one time. I don't think I was with them this time. Mm. We're out. They were out. somewhere doing something. I don't know what it was. And next day they bring in a recording of Fred had changed up the so he was singing like a rap song, mm-hmm. but in a So they brought in the recording of Freddie singing a rap song in a Lounge Lizard tempo.
Yeah.
But I mean, he'd do that every time I saw him. So I remember we used to play this game of who sings this song, and he would play some obscure mm-hmm. song, rock song, blues, jazz, and I had no idea who it was. And little by little, he kind of started teaching me a little bit of music and started kind of expanding mm-hmm. what it was that I listened to.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Freddie's great. Yeah,
he's a library of music, man. That guy's, he's a passionate musician, man. And I'm glad to have him.
I know you need to know a little bit of everything, right? For mm-hmm. everybody that it is that you play with, but what's your go-to music? What do you like to listen to?
You know what? Lately, I mean, it goes through phases. For a while there, it was, I remember for a few years back, I was really hooked on Jeff Buckley. What attracted him to me was that haunting kind of mysticism. He had a mystery about him, and he had a haunting quality about him that in his voice, his delivery, it's like he... one of the aspects that I loved about Jeff Buckley's delivery was that he was unafraid. He was unafraid in his singing, and even when he was singing something and he would catch a little froggy in his throat, he wouldn't try to hide it. He'd go right back to it and expose it.
Right.
And so that fearlessness was something that and mysticism and kind of haunting quality was something that I really liked about him, because it was captivating. It was mesmerizing and captivating. And then you know, fast forward a few years, I got really caught up on Carlos Antonio Jobim and Stan Getz and that whole bossa nova scene.
Right.
And what I liked about that was the earthiness of the music. And I like the chord voicings were very, very different from what we use, you know, up here in America. And so that was one of the things that really drew me to that music, was the voicings and the chord progressions and everything that came with it. It just felt like taking a deeper step into the musical realm.
Right.
Lately, for whatever reason, I mean, I'd always enjoyed the music, but up until recently, I was like, well, why don't I play any of that stuff? You know, it's kind of weird. Which was Gypsy Jazz. Gypsy Jazz is, there was a guy back in, I'm going to say it was like the 50s, 60s. His name was Django Reinhardt.
Okay.
And he was the creator of Gypsy Jazz, or what they call Hot House Jazz. If you picture any Tom and Jerry cartoon, it's that, you know, that you know, that kind of stuff, and it's very, very cooking, very right. fast moving. But man, the proliferation of notes that they throw in there, man, that they incorporate into that guitar work. I think that whole genre of music was founded on the guitar. The guitar was the rhythm. Mm-hmm. The guitar was the melody, the main melody chords. And from that guy was where all the big band and all the swing and all that stuff, really a lot of it stemmed from this guy, Django Reinhardt. So that's one of my latest kicks that I'm on right now, is just delving deeper and deeper and deeper into the musical realms. I remember when we first started listening to music, one of the first albums I ever owned was the Beatles. It was that double set that had, you know, a blue one and a red one and an apple on it.
Right.
And so you start listening to that, and then you know, you do your homework and you discover that George Harrison was a damn good guitarist, and that a lot of the stuff that he picked up came from Chuck Berry. So we start digging. Mm-hmm. All right, it came from Chuck Berry, and it came from Lightning Hopkins. You know, we listened to the Stones, and you listened to Clapton. Oh, these guys are singing stuff from Robert Johnson and the blues. So we go digging back and back and back. And the further you dig, the more opportunities there is for you presently to pick up the music where it was at this point, where Clapton went back and started digging around in Robert Johnson's fields, and he brought that back into the future, you know, and so it's a good opportunity for a musician, for any musician, to go digging back into the musical you know, fields, and pick up where somebody left off and take it in a whole new direction, you know. I think that's where the opportunity is. Nowadays, you know, you've heard it say, everybody says everything's been played, everything's already been invented. And man, might be the case. There's only 7 notes in music, and all of music, A through G, and then it starts over again. So, you know, that's all you get. But the arrangement, the style, the soul that you pour into it, mm-hmm. is what makes it unique. I mean, I could sit here and sing, you know, "The Wind Cries Mary" for you, and it's not gonna be Jimi Hendrix's version, unfortunately, but it's gonna be something new, something that's only I could do it the way that I do it.
Right. Know? Exactly.
But yeah, that's as far as musical genres and musical ideas, I'll take turns just going through different eras of music, and from different parts of the world too, from Cuba, from Africa, from Romania, from wherever, you know. I mean, just and just try to expand my vocabulary, my musical vocabulary as an artist, and incorporate that and be able to present it to these people who we were talking about earlier, only listen to one genre of music, and now start expanding their catalog of music.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
What I know it's a lot easier to dig through the music digitally nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can find anything online. Mm-hmm. Here at home, you're hanging out, family, not family, alone with them. What's your music? Are you a digital guy? Are you a vinyl guy? Do you still have cassettes? What's happened? You play your own? What?
You know, I guess the delivery of it has never been important to me. Just defining it wherever I have, you know, of course, I got an expensive CD collection and nowhere to play it on now. So these days you can basically go online and find any song that there is. Yeah, man. I, if I'm honest, I don't have like one particular type of music. If I'm chilling here at the house and I'm just working on stuff, it could be Buena Vista Social Club, you know, a nice Cuban kind of thing. It could be reggae. It could be, you know, Bob Marley and just keeping things happy and lively around here, man, while I'm working. Or it could be, like I said, Marco Antonio Muñiz and Javier Solis and growing up with all that, and I enjoy. I'll be honest. I enjoy listening to all that stuff because it brings or it keeps my folks present. Whenever I play all the boleros and the trios and you know all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. I was just imagining that my mom's in the kitchen cooking something, and my dad's probably you know working on something in the yard or something.
Right.
Having lost both of them, oh man, it's already been about 3-4 years now. That's my comfort music, I guess, is when I put that stuff on. They also enjoyed the heck out of Don McLean and you know, John Denver and all that singer-songwriter kind of stuff, too.
Right.
So that holds a very, very dear place in my heart, too. Anytime I play that kind of stuff, it's amazing. The power of music, create different, you know, and invite different people who, just by listening to the first 3 notes of a song, boom, you know, it creates a whole new world.
Right.
and it brings back people that aren't here anymore, and or memories or laughter. The power of music is pretty phenomenal, man. When you really consider it. I mean, even for myself, like I said, I'm able to spend time with my parents even though they're not here anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So.
I think I think a lot of people get kind of caught up with what they like, which is fine. I mean, if that's your preference and that's what you want to stay in, that's great. Part of the reason I was really excited about talking to you is because of that, right? You expand, you go into other areas, you dig, you search, and you have a huge selection of music that you both know, that you enjoy, and that you could pass on, right? Mm-hmm. So this type of music lover doesn't die out. Mm-hmm. What are you doing, anything to pass it on? Have you ever thought about teaching classes, anything like that? Anything to make sure that that this in itself keeps going.
You know what? I guess I'd like to believe that just by fulfilling my role, by me doing what it is that I do, and just staying as busy as possible, man, playing 3 gigs a day and running around and doing that, just exposing it, just keep on putting it out there. I'll be at a gig and even if it's sometimes it's a young kid who's just like fascinated, just staring, just like, wow, how's he doing that? You know, like some kind of magic to him, you know. Still, of course, it's just practice. But then hearing from you know, seeing the same group of people and hearing from their folks, the next time I see him, hey man, well, he got all excited, he wants to play guitar, and he wants, you know, he's doing it, he's picking it up. Or sometimes it's an older man, like ya viejito in his age, and it's just sitting there, just reminiscing, you know, be it from lost in an old melody and an old song. And sometimes even they're encouraged. I used to play guitar back when I was young or whatever. And then the next time I see them, they'll tell me, hey, guess what? I picked up the guitar and I started playing again, you know. So I think everybody just walking your own. You walk your own path, Ozzy, and I know you illuminate that path for a lot of other people. And so in that same sense, I just feel like if I focus on my purpose and I'm dedicated to going out there and just doing it, man, working, grinding, that in itself is shedding the light and you know, spreading it out even further.
Is there anything that you think I should have asked you but didn't ask you?
That's a good question. let me think. I guess maybe, I don't know. Does one ever retire from music?
There you go.
Maybe.
I don't want to necessarily answer that question, because it is your question. You're the musician. I'm the music lover.
You know, and I'd like to believe that one would not. I think music is less of a job and more of a passion. But I would also like to. I would hope that if I ever lost my passion for music, I would have the courage to stop playing. And pass that over to somebody else, somebody who does have the appeal, the fresh, the vibrancy, to deliver it with the proper intensity that it should be delivered with. You know, there's a saying that says, every time you go out and perform, perform like it was your last one. Perform like this was it. You don't get to do it anymore. And that still rings true, man. Every time I set up, after I finally plugged in the last cables and I'm finally ready to rock, and I'll hold my drink up. This one's for all those who can't do it anymore. And get going, you know, and give it all. Give it all so that somebody, you know, people passing by, are they going to say, wow, that guy's amazing, or look at that guy, he's crazy. So it's got to be that level of involvement.
And yeah.
Excuse me.
Tell me again, what are your playing dates again? When do you play? Which spots at?
My steady spots right now are Wednesdays at Anson 11 and 6 to 9 over there. Thursdays, same time frame at the Doubletree Hotel. If it's good weather, it's up on the 7th floor terrace, so it's really nice. And in poor conditions, we'll go down to the restaurant, Fire Restaurant and Liquid Lounge down there. And then Fridays, I'm over at Tabla. Great spot over there, Wine and Tapas. It's run by Norbert Portillo, who's he's got his hand in all sorts of things here in El Paso, Ode Brewery and all sorts of things. But man, it's a great spot down there, good ambiance. And I heard the music's pretty good too. Fridays at Tabla, 7 to 10.
And then Saturdays, you're open to gigs, right? Yeah. So anybody that's interested can reach you, can get events.
Yeah, Saturdays are my days to freelance and go out there and play all sorts of things. About every other Saturday, I'm either at one of the vineyards, be it Zin Valle Vineyards or at Sombra Antigua Vineyards out there on the old highway. It's a nice, romantic, kind of a relaxing drive out there while you're out there anyways. But at the vineyards out there, I'll usually haunt those spots too.
Okay. Let's do a little rapid fire, just so people know who Julio is.
Let's do it.
Give me your favorite restaurant.
I'm going to go with Casita Linda. Casita Linda is a Mexican spot over on the northeast of town with the Hondo Pass.
Okay. What's your go-to plate there?
Ooh, man. I'm a frijolero, man. I love my beans, man. So, no, they have a great flauta plate that comes with rice and beans, and that's my go-to.
Okay. Give me your go-to bar.
Man, you know what? I don't have one. I don't drink. I don't drink, so I don't really like go out to a bar much. If I had to pick one, maybe Aceitunas. Aceitunas is fun all the time. Every time I've been there, it's fun.
Yeah, classic place. Give me your favorite movie of all time.
Wow, that's a tough one. Shawshank. Shawshank Redemption ranks up there with all of them. I really love that movie. Especially the line that says, get busy living or get busy dying.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me your favorite guitarist of all time.
Equiso.
Es más, I'll make it easy on you. Give me your top three.
All right.
Give me your top three guitarists.
That's a bit more doable there. All right. Paco de Lucia is definitely up there. Django Reinhardt is up there. And for the third, I'm going to go with... Man, that's a tough one, man. There's so many spots to fill. Shoot. I guess I'm going with Clapton, man, on that third one.
With Clapton?
Yeah. Paco de Lucia, Django Reinhardt, and Clapton.
Why not? Okay. Give me your dream car.
Dream car, man. Of course, I was a huge fan of Kit. So I'm looking at a Firebird. You know what's sad? I actually owned one of those. My old man bought me one when I was a young punk who didn't appreciate things in life.
Uh-huh.
And I totaled that car. Her name was Ginger. And she ended up smeared on the side of the freeway over there, man. So I still have my regrets about that. And Dad, I'm sorry to this day. I'm sorry.
I think we all have that. I remember my... I'm a Lincoln guy. 68, 69 Lincoln. That's my dream. Yeah. Always has been. I remember years ago when I first had been married, my dad gave me a Lincoln as a wedding gift. Drove up to Denver, says, here's a car, take it down.
Yeah.
Brought it down, just ran it into the ground.
Yeah,
and then
man.
End up with, you know, what do I do with this car? I have a family, I have kids. What am I doing with this big boat? And then you end up selling it for scrap. And then years later, you're like, man, I wish I still had that car.
Yeah.
I think we've all been there before. Let's do a little overrated, underrated.
Okay.
Overrated, underrated. You tell me. Are they overrated? Are they underrated? And tell me why you think so.
All right.
Ready? Overrated, underrated. Tattoos.
I'm I'm gonna say underrated. I'm gonna say underrated. A lot of people get him for different reasons, and some of those reasons. I don't have a tattoo on my body. I like to think of my scars as my tattoos, but I know a lot of people who have things that are near and dear and precious to them, and things that are no longer here, or people that are no longer here, and that's the reason that they get them. And God, you know, God bless them for keeping that memory. You know.
Okay. Yeah. Overrated, underrated, electric cars.
I want to say that's underrated too, man. With the potential for what's to come is very promising, and I support that, man. So I'm going to say that's underrated. Go electric cars.
Go electric cars.
Yeah.
Let's see. Overrated, underrated, Cardi B.
Oh, man, I'm going to. I don't know, dude. I don't even
is
know.
Is that outside of the musical genres?
Yeah, that's is that music? I'm sorry. No. I'm playing. Like we said earlier, there's beauty in everything. Beauty are qualities that to be found in everything. And so, man, but I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if I'm dating myself here, but I don't know much about Cardi B, man. For the truth. I really don't.
I don't think there's anything wrong with you not knowing right, about Cardi B.
All right. I hope I passed that question.
Give me some of your final thoughts, parting words, anything you want to get out to, you know, the people that are listening, anything you want to leave them with.
I want to leave everyone with a message of hope, with a message of kindness and humility. And I'd like to just remind everyone that you know, everyone you know and everyone you meet was meant to be there at that precise moment that you needed, and that we really are one, guys. I mean, honestly, just on different days and in different suits, but we're all one, and we just have to remember to treat each other that way. And leave tomorrow open. There's a lot of promise there, and what we do with it is all up to us. We can do anything. We can do any job. We can do any task, and be difficult about it, or we can be easy about it, or benevolent about it. And so, I would just ask everyone out there to just choose benevolence over malevolence at every opportunity given, and just be kind. Be cool. Be cool.
And be cool.
Yeah, that's it, man.
I mean, like I said, I'm super honored. I'm humbled that you took time to sit down with me, sit down with us, talk to us a little bit about your journey, your roads. I'm really super thankful. Really, I am. Till Friday, I'll be there on Friday with you guys.
Awesome.
So I'm gonna go hang out with you guys.
Awesome.
Thank you for allowing us to come in.
My pleasure.
And we gotta hit the course one of these days.
I would love that again. You know, Freddie just told me that he gets one day off. So
there you go. That's the day.
We're going golfing.
That's the day.
We're going golfing.
That's good.
All right, brother. Thank you very much, Ozzy.
Andale, thank you, Julio.
All right, guys. So there you have it. Great conversation with Julio. If you guys have seen him live, I'm sure you guys were as thrilled as I am every time that I see him. If you haven't seen him live, then I really suggest you guys look him up, check out his schedule, go to Tabla, go to the Garden, go to Doubletree, go wherever it is that he's at and check out his stuff. He's also available for, like you guys heard, private events. So, I want to thank Julio for taking the time to sit down and talk to us a little bit about what he's doing. Chantes Longos. I don't know if a lot of you guys have heard that before, but you heard a little bit. Radio La Chusma, still a great band around, and the Sullivan Brothers. So great recommendations from Julio. Conversations, nonrepconversations@gmail.com. Send us in your feedback. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know. You know, what you like, what you don't like. If you guys have any recommendations on who you think should be on the show, send it in. You know, we'll talk to them. If you want to participate in the show, if you think you have a story that needs to be shared and that people want to listen to, let us know. Send in your email. We want to have all the feedback possible from you guys. a quick shout out to David Moncayo. David Moncayo, our engineer, helping us put everything together, working hard every week to get the show out to you guys. Wholesome Creative Works on the artwork. Check out my Instagram page, my Facebook page. You'll see upcoming episodes, some clips from the show, you know, so on and so forth. But again, thank you guys for joining us this week. Next week we have another doozy, so you guys want to stick around. And if you guys see me on the street and ask me who's next, I'm not going to tell you guys. So stop asking me. You're going to have to listen, subscribe, like, you know, all that jazz. Thank you very much, guys. And we'll see you next week.